qualitative information was collected in this regard. So here are the correctional services that we looked at. Excuse me. We here are indicating the province and the number of participants and the groups of participants that were interviewed or engaged in focus group discussions. So when we look at the Free State, we can see inmates in 10 in focus group discussions, 5 warders in focus group discussions, and official interviews 4. So in each province, this number indicates the participants that we could access to get information from. So the interviews were conducted in English with some translation where it was necessary. And we are presenting this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, because as we present the results, this will provide a context in terms of how this study was conducted. So English was the standard medium of communication, while translations were necessary in some situations. Again, we use a semi-structured and open-ended interview questions where you know, some questions required, you know, a structured situation where you would say yes or no or justify. Some you were given a chance to explain your own experience of the situations. In cases where possible, supporting documents were requested. So if an official indicated that this is what we are doing, this is what we have, we would request those documents, whether it's a policy or an annual report or budget information, and we obtain some of those. And what we present here is also based on those documents. So this is like pretty much triangulation to try and cross-reference the information we acquired from different modes of collecting information. The issues of ethics were observed, such as voluntary participation, informed consent, and confidentiality and anonymity. Obviously, people sign a consent form at will before they participate. So the reports were compiled in this regard in 2017 and 2018. Just to provide a bit of some of the limitations we came across as we conducted this study, the controlled nature of the prison environment had the potential to prevent inmates from speaking freely. And this is what I was saying, that much as we tried to separate the groups, that environment on its own can be intimidating for people because it's a situation where it's like walls have ears. So you get what you probe and cross-reference and make conclusion in that sense. So what I'm saying is this is a research project. It's based on information that was provided, and basically you can't say this is 100% everything that's happening, because the limitations means some critical information may have been missed because people were not very free to speak. In some places, some professionals, including doctors, were not available. And in some instances, this was understandable because they were serving different correctional, you had one doctor or one psychologist serving different correctional centers, so they may confirm an appointment, but on the day they are required on different places, and they couldn't be interviewed. But as the table has shown, those are the numbers that we could access in terms of the participants. Coming to the research findings, we see that in Johannesburg, you have an overcrowding of 59%. So in big cities, that's what you usually find. But we also found that they did have accommodation for mother and baby. They also housed medium-term offenders where there was overcrowding as well than any other section. And again, this would make sense that medium-term offenders who are not, sentenced would be, crowded into one room while waiting for their trials or whatever the situation could have been. But I think what is key here is the overcrowding. And if that's still the situation now during COVID, the risk is even higher. So the general problem of shortage of hot water due to, aging infrastructure, but the facility was kept neat. I think some of these facilities, the challenge in terms of the infrastructure is that these are old buildings. So the piping, if you like, may be eroded, so to speak. But generally, the issue is overcrowding. In terms of healthcare and related services, the center, their initial screening process for offenders, once they are admitted, they included oral and physical examinations. The focus on oral examinations was on the health history of the offender, current illnesses, communicable diseases, mental health, hypertension, cardio. So you get a basket of services that are being provided in terms of screening incoming offenders. And the second phase involved physical examinations, which focused on your physical condition, such as your pregnancy status, for instance, when you come. When offenders are found to be pregnant, they are immediately booked in the hospital section of the facility until they had delivered, either at Baragwanath or Lilian Ngoyi, and then they are moved back to the mother and baby unit in the correctional center. So basically, Honorable Chair and members, the list here, one can summarize by saying in Johannesburg, you had a reasonably acceptable standards of screening inmates when they came into their facilities, which included even HIV tests and also providing antiretroviral treatment where it was necessary. But as we go, obviously, there is always room for improvement. And that's what we will see as the presentation continues. In terms of psychological services that are provided, there was a clinical psychologist who provided necessary psychological services based on referrals from either the doctor, the nurse, or social workers. Major areas of treatment, especially for inmates, especially those who were mothers, included issues of depression, anxiety, difficulty of parenting behind bars. And I mean, these are like pretty much your common sense kind of emotional turbulences that any human being would find themselves in when you are arrested, and especially when you have a baby or you are pregnant and so forth. In terms of social work programs, the social workers were responsible for the center's social work and related services to assist offenders to cope with incarceration. So as mothers come, anxious as they are, you had social workers who would be there to take them through the process, assist them to cope, assist them to accept the reality or deal with the reality in terms of the conditions that they find themselves in. and they assisted by also putting children into foster care. This also had its own downside. We know about the situation of separating the mother and the baby, and those kind of traumas that obviously social workers need to be hyperactive when it comes to that, and helping inmates cope with that kind of situation. In focus group discussions with inmates, they were largely happy with the social work services by the center, as indicated earlier, that the services were found to be mainly satisfactory in the Johannesburg Correctional Center. In terms of nutrition, the meals were provided. In some cases, the nursing staff prescribed the necessary diet for sick offenders based on the therapeutic manual. So this was found to be a good thing because it wasn't a one-size-fits-all. For instance, if you are diabetic, of course, you need a particular kind of diet, and it was very appreciated that the facility took that into cognizance. The food was prepared by the offenders themselves under supervision of the nutritionist. However, the focus group discussion, again, many inmates complained about the poor preparation of food and largely satisfied with this kind of, with the nutrition services provided. So, Honorable Chair, members, I think this just elaborates on what I said earlier when I presented the methodology in terms of separating the groups. So while you get a good picture in one hand, when you have inmates alone, the picture changes slightly. Hence I said perhaps there is more that people were scared to talk about, but let's focus on what we have at this stage. But the results do make one wonder what the follow-up to this study will look like, because my chairperson and commissioners may correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we have done a follow-up study on this particular research. So this is perhaps work that we still need to follow up. In terms of resourcing of the center, the majority of the center staff were female, as we can see there listed in terms of their categories of work: center management, 13 nurses, social workers, psychologists, and psychiatrists. So, this is another picture that you get generally in patriarchal societies. There are those occupations where we say women are carers, therefore they will be concentrated in that particular industry. So, but this study is not about that at this stage. It's about the services in correctional centers. So in terms, in concluding around the Johannesburg, around issues of staffing, the officials complained about work overload. We talked about the overload in terms of inmates, which makes sense when officials also talk about work overload, having to work long hours, and in some cases, the lack of staff caused the center to rely on local NGOs to provide assistance. And if one were to make a relationship some association with the previous presentation, hence we were talking about recognizing NPOs and NGOs when it comes to how they assist our government duty bearers in the work that they do for the nation. So this also really puts some support, if I can call that, on that claim that this sector also needs to be taken care of in terms of resourcing, because some volunteer, but some support is needed in that sense. Skills training of the officials of the center, the department, the department did provide some general skills training to all center officials after their appointment. The center expected all officials, including professionals, to have knowledge of legislative framework that guides the work of the department and other relevant departments, such as health. And this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, I always have a comment, because this is what you see across the nation, that when we appoint people, we make an assumption that they know the law. And often that is not the case. And for us as the commission, we feel that capacity cannot be underplayed, especially when it comes to promoting the laws that we have put in place. Our appointees need to be trained. So hopefully the training in this regard should also focus on the law, because I don't think people break the law deliberately. If you don't know what the Nursing Act says, all the Department of Health, Department of Social Development, if you don't know their prescripts, you are likely to contravene them and unintentionally so. So the assumption that they know, as a commission, we feel that people need to be capacitated to be able to operationalize these pieces of legislation. Other skills training needed, especially for professionals like clinical psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, to be provided by external agencies. And we're making this recommendation, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, because sometimes when different professions have their different schools of thought, and gender equality and human rights is often not part of that thinking. So they need to be sensitized to this. Much as they are experts in their areas of work, there are certain constitutional matters, especially the Bill of Rights, that they may contravene, again, unintentionally so, because they are not yet oriented to promoting that in the course of providing the services they provide. Going to Biza Makate Female Correctional Center in the Free State, the center has a capacity to accommodate 216 inmates, but had a total of 189. So the issue of overcrowding here was not in question. The center did not have a problem of overcrowding, as I said. The center was in a state of good repair and generally kept clean. Cells were adequately ventilated and sufficiently illuminated. So you have an infrastructure here that is, if you like, adequate also in the cells. And there appeared to be no shortage of facilities, amenities, including beds, storage, ablution, and sanitation. The center also appeared to be complying with the National Health Act in terms of providing for the health and sanitation needs of inmates. However, the food preparation area had a shortage of equipment and was generally small and appeared dilapidated. So again, you have the good and the bad, and obviously those things that needs to be rectified, recommendations were provided. Continuing in terms of their general health care, there was a provision of general health care for female inmates at the center. On arrival, again, you have that screening, which included pregnancy. If you're pregnant, the gestational status, all the reproductive health that are required by female inmates. If they had babies, the babies would be immunized. If they hadn't been immunized, so you see a service again here on in terms of healthcare services. You see a service that is generally satisfactory. And again, as we say as a commission, that we conduct these research and investigation projects, because there is reason for us to believe there is room for improvement as per our observations, whether they came through a complaint or other means through which we get information that trigger these projects. We found inconsistencies, however, in relation to the application of these assessment procedures. And again, the focus group discussion with inmates revealed that not all inmates were assessed according to the prescribed procedure. Some inmates pointed out that only oral assessment were carried out without physical examinations. The lack of physical examination placed inmates at risk of catching contagious diseases. And again, maybe as a matter of emphasis, just to indicate that each of the participants in their different categories had different experiences of what is happening. So on one hand, the picture is good, and on another hand, the picture indicates that certain things need to improve. Some health risks and challenges were included: undetected pregnancies, inmates who defaulted on their antiretroviral treatments. So these were some of the things that were identified during the study as a risk, as per the information provided by the inmates, including different ailments, untreated sexual STDs, and so forth. Particularly inmates with chronic conditions and the issues of their medications. So there are certain things that you find are missed, but they can be detrimental not only to the inmates, but also to the people who works within the correctional facilities, because contagious diseases don't choose, they cut across. If things are not done right, everyone is at risk. The hospital section center provided primary health care to babies, even though some mothers complained about the quality of medical care and that their babies were continuously sick. Mothers complained about the shortage of milk formula, which was supplied irregularly, and shortage of clothing for their babies. The center relied again on donation from NGOs. Women-specific healthcare services were provided to inmates, including pap smears and mammograms. So these are some of the good things that we found in the Bizar Makate facility, which also included HIV testing. We found that while nurses were readily available for consultation with inmates in the center, the doctor was not always available except on Tuesdays. He was responsible for 14 centers in the region. And this is what I alluded to earlier, that when we say certain services are lacking, we really need to look at the foundation, how these centers are resourced. Because if you have one doctor manning 14 centers, it's a bit not conducive for effective service delivery. The nurses had to carry the workload of the and some of the responsibilities of the doctor or refer severe cases to nearby hospitals. The inmates had access to other healthcare specialists such as optometrists, oncologists, dentists, local at the local hospital. So you again, it's that mix of situations where sometimes there are alternatives when the doctor is not available. The hospitals are around where inmates can be referred. In terms of psychological services, they actually insisted that this was provided and cared for by all the needs and took care of all the needs of all offenders through the provision of a range of psychological services to cope where this was needed. However, when you talk to inmates, some were not aware of the psychological services at the center. And the official stated that referrals for psychological services are made through either the nurse or a social worker. However, many inmates complained of failure to refer inmates with mental health problems to psychologists, and they felt that nursing staff didn't perceive mental health illness as serious. They pointed out that depression among female inmates was common, especially among inmates concerned about the welfare of their families and children. It appeared that due to heavy workload, the center psychologist was unable to attend to many of the inmates on a regular basis and in a consistent manner on a, in a long-term basis at the time of the study. That is what we could conclude. And as indicated, because the psychologist was manning 14 facilities in the region, the center social worker was responsible for a program that provided interventions to assist inmates with domestic issues. The inmates generally, as indicated, struggled to cope behind bars. I think we can, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, if we look at gender roles and gender relations, it makes sense that female inmates will be more distressed because in our patriarchal society, they are the ones who take care of the home. And I'm not saying that's the right way for things to be, but the reality is such. And when they are arrested, obviously the burden of worrying about their children increases. So they struggle to cope with that kind of situation because they've left young children at home and so forth. But then you had that kind of counseling by social workers, including anger management, substance abuse. And these are some of the things that manifest when you are in a situation that you may not be able to cope. But counseling is there, accessible to some. And as we have seen, some say they are not accessible. And again, the center appeared to cater for the unique hygiene needs of female inmates through the provision of sanitary, I will call them dignitary packs, if you like, and nutrition, a female nutrition based at the center, designed a special dietary program for inmates. However, some inmates complained about the poorly cooked meals. Again, actually, as we go through the centers, we will see that there are common themes in the findings. So there are slight differences where some centers are doing very well, some are doing very bad, but there will be some common situations, like when it comes to food, for instance, you find that the inmate's perspective is different from the official's perspective. Also, with other services, you see those kinds of differences in how the services are perceived as provided and as received by the inmates. Therefore, they also claim that the center did not cater for the specific nutritional needs of pregnant and lactating or breastfeeding women. The resourcing, the center indicated the budgetary allocation was inadequate. I mean, as with many situations, the budget is always inadequate to cater for the health and welfare needs of the inmates. They referred to the constant shortage of relevant equipment and supplies, such as your kitchen equipment, personal hygiene items and products. They pointed out that much of the center's medical equipment was donated. Again, the issue of NGOs seems to be cutting across these services, and also in the case of their shelters. So that would tell us that NGOs play a key role in this country. Some of the officials said that staff complement of the center was limited and that there was a need to create more posts in order to cope with the workload. Again, this is a cross-cutting kind of a situation. Also the doctor, the issue of the doctor here and the facilities that the doctor is attending to in the region. Skills training and capacity building. The center had not provided its personnel, the warders, with ongoing skills training to deal with the unique needs and human rights of female inmates. And I think I have indicated this previously, that no matter what profession you are in, our experience as the commission and also as individuals who worked in this sector, based on research and different findings that we have had, we and the trainings that we have conducted in some instances, you find that different professions stick to the manual. Human rights, gender inequality, access, you know, those are like far off things that don't apply to a clinician, for instance. They don't apply to a psychologist, for instance, and so forth. And this, for me, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, speaks to the fact that these issues of gender inequality need to be part of the curriculum, hopefully, as we develop as a country, for every profession. Because wherever we are, we need to recognize the human rights of people and also the acknowledge and correct the inequalities between the sexes and the genders in our population. So that for me is just not a finding for the correctional center, because it's a common finding in everything we do. So we also find that the warders were ill-prepared to handle female inmates. Again, it's the emphasis I have been making. They related their experiences with the center security warders, who would regularly dismiss their ailments. These are the inmates, saying the warders dismiss their ailments as attention-seeking tactics and would thus deny the request to seek medical attention. They were largely uninformed about the health and reproductive rights of the female inmates. The lack of training for warders was attributed to the cost-cutting measures that were being implemented by the department at the time. The nurses, social worker, and clinical psychologists were provided training through their respective professional organization and were therefore better able to handle and deal the healthcare and reproductive needs of the female inmates, which again emphasize what I have said initially. When we come to Portsmore in the Western Cape, the center appeared to have an old aging infrastructure in some section. Water leaks from the roof were observed, including paint peeling. So these are some of the old buildings that are alluded to earlier. However, the overall facility was kept in terms of its hygiene or the sense of hygiene was good. It was also providing for the needs of female inmates, including the needs for small babies, through its mother and baby unit. So another cross-cutting situation is that so far the centers do have mother and baby units. So it looks like there are some standards that are followed, but in some areas you find that there are inconsistencies, and the factors contributing to that may vary depending on each correctional center. Most communal cells, especially those for remand inmates, were not in a good state, although the single cells were in a good state. So it looks like those, in Johannesburg, we also, there we were talking about the overcrowding in this particular cells, whereas here it's about just the good appearance of the cells themselves, where you have people who are still remanded. It was also noted that the center had a major problem of overcrowding in some instances, where single cells were accommodating three offenders at a time. While smoking smoking was officially prohibited, the inmates indicated many smoked and that smoking inside communal cells exposed other inmates to the dangers of passive smoking and secondhand smoking. And one would imagine if there are babies in that cell, that would even be more detrimental. The center had a 10-bed hospital in the premises. Its consultation and voluntary counseling rooms were accredited. So generally, that was a good finding for us. In terms of health programs offered by the center, the medical screening of offenders, again, this was determined by the health condition of the inmates detected when they are admitted. The center had an in-house doctor available twice a week, which is better than the other center that we had just presented, and four in-house nurses. The inmates complained about the nurses not being easily accessible, thus limiting the availability of medical care to inmates. In cases of emergencies, the center, again, you had a referral route to the nearest hospital. Some of the inmates claimed that one had to be dying before being referred to the hospital. And again, it talks to that situation where some inmates reported that the people with psychological problems are being called, they are being said to be attention-seeking or something to that effect. So they did provide the inmates with services such as pap smear, ANC as in antenatal care, postnatal care, and so forth. And babies born within the facilities were sent to a nearby Wesley Clinic for immunization. So generally, the Portsmouth Correctional Center has the reasonably the good services that we saw in some of the facilities that have already been presented. And on-site, a psychologist was also in the premises and rendered the services as required, and the services were praised by inmates. So although access was seen as inadequate, and if one were to cross-reference all these things, the issues of working long hours, you know, too many facilities, you see a situation where some of our service providers are doing the best they can, and inmates can see that, but sometimes the under-resourcing does cloud the good work that some of the staff are doing. They had access to social work services, although according to the official, the process of placing babies outside the center once they reach the age of two often took too long to complete. Nutrition, again, complaints about the poor quality of food. Pregnant women, mothers with babies were placed on a different nutritional program, and they did not have the same complaints. Female offenders in focus groups discussions complained of a lack of adequate sanitary towels, and they also revealed that during their menstruation period, the warders applied the show and I give practice of rationing the supply of sanitary towels due to shortage. And this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I usually say this is the lowest of the low, to say, show me the blood, then I'll. I don't know how anyone can do that to another human being. But apparently, the inmate says this does happen. And if this is the case, and depending on how prominent it is, I think these are the kind of attitudes that we need to address as decision makers or duty bearers or overseers around these services. Because we cannot have this happen in a democracy like ours. The officials complained about the lack of adequate budget, again cutting across. They argued that the mother and baby unit had limited resources and relied on donors. Again, we go back to the issue of NGOs, although here it's not specified. And the officials also insisted that due to shortage of staff, they faced severe workload. In terms of training, some officials said only rudimentary training was offered during the induction. They pointed out to the lack of, especially to handle challenges related to mental health issues and disability, including gender-related training. I can't emphasize this enough, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as I had alluded to previously. The issue of training our professionals around gender rights and gender justice. The recommendations we provided on this research include that in order to address the issue of inadequate training and capacity building, we recommended that the department should carry out a skills audit of key personnel that work directly with inmates in order to develop a clear long-term skills development strategy. This can be done by approaching the safety and security sector, the CETA, for funding and develop training programs that would focus on gender equality and human rights. And this, the CETA sector is one sector that often we omit to think of in our implementation of programs, but they are there to build capacity in the public service for us to be able to implement our priorities effectively. So this sector needs to be utilized, and that is one of our recommendations to the department. The long-term skills strategy should be supported by the development of an annual skills plan with clear allocation of financial resources with a focus on knowledge on how to handle specific needs of females. And here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is also an area where when we make a recommendation that something needs to happen, often in South Africa, we have found that beautiful laws and policies are implemented, are developed, but there are no guidelines in terms, often there are no guidelines in terms of how to operationalize those. So the skills strategy need to provide those guidelines in terms of how to do this and also sustain it. Because this work is not a once-off work. It's for all our lives, basically, as we come and go in this world. We need to be able to learn to do these things properly so that we'll fulfill our slogan of a better life for all. We also recommended that the department should carry out a thorough needs analysis, and I have spoken to this in the beginning, to determine the optimal number of all professionals to carry out functions for caring for female inmates, especially their mental health status. The department should develop a clear program of collaboration with relevant NGOs in the sector. Again, I think as I was presenting, some of these recommendations were popping up, and also in realization that prison cell overcrowding contributes to the burden on prison resources and exacerbates the transfer of communicable diseases, greater efforts to reduce overcrowding, such as diversion programs for women and juvenile offenders from the criminal justice system, is recommended. So these are like alternatives to reduce overcrowding. The department should also formulate a policy to regulate the supply and distribution of toiletries, including sanitary towel. This policy should contain clear and suitable guidelines on the quality and quantity of sanitary towels to be provided within an appropriate period of time. So you don't want to have a situation where you have to prove that you are menstruating before you are given a sanitary pad. Honorable Chair, honorable members, my commissioners, this is the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just lost my connectivity for a very short while, and I see the end of the presentation. Am I correct that you have completed your presentation?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, you've now received two presentations from the Commission for Gender Equality. There are a number of members who want to raise some points with you. I'm going to mention those members as they have raised their hands. It would be Honorable Sukas first, as she has to leave for another meeting after she has asked a question. Then it would be Honorable Ismail Clark from Staden. Klengwa, Wilson, Gela, Onya.
Sorry, Chair, thank you. Sorry, Chair, I'm after some disturbance.
Sukas, Ismail Clark, Van Staden, Honorable Dr. Jemba Kwayo, Klengwa, Wilson, Gela, Onya. In that order, please.
Where is Sokato, Chair, have indicated?
Sokacha will be right at the end. Thank you.
Munyai last.
Munyai is second last, and Sukasha would be, I'll just switch it around. Let's stick to that, yes. So Munyai is second last, Sukasha last. Thank you very much, honorable members. Please proceed with raising your points with the presenters. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you to all the members for allowing me to pose my question first. Chairperson, and this is to the Commission, really, the question, but I will add it to a comment. The issue of default on specifically ARVs, over the last period, the last 2 years with COVID, and before as well, I received in my constituency complaints specifically from individuals who lives with HIV AIDS or suffer STIs or STDs. The stigma being amplified by the kind of service that individuals receive, and because of that people do not go seek for treatment. And I now see that in this presentation again, it is brought, it is highlighted by the Commission. The issue I have addressed both in the Basic Education Portfolio Committee with the school health project that is being run by DBE, because this issue is actually multi-layered. It is in correctional services, as rightly brought out, that they are default, that people default for a number of reasons, of course. But one of the major contributors to default that I have found, for instance, with the schools, is that there were a specific incident that happened that caused a young person to refuse to maintain the ARV treatment, and it resulted, of course, in secondary infections, and ultimately the child died because of that. So my question to the Commission is whether other research has been done, research investigation into the lapsing of very critical treatment like ARV for people living with HIV and AIDS, and whether there is plans or there has been any requests for this to be done, because I want to raise it as a serious issue that I have encountered within the health system. And in fact, I have a meeting with a specific primary care facility where such incidences is causing people to say, I am not doing this. So my question really to the commission, are there any other research investigations broader being done specifically to address the issue of stigma and the treatment of individuals that lives with diseases such as HIV and AIDS? Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the colleagues.
Good morning, and thank you for the presentation. I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. My first question, since government does not have sufficient funds, you know, in the fiscus, what realistic alternatives can you suggest to supplement funding so that we can have, you know, efficiently run shelters? My second question, with regards to the investigative report on the state of shelters in South Africa, now, how has this implementation of recommendations been accepted from all stakeholders? You know, are there any that from your presentation, it seems like, you know, the relationship is very good, you know, the work relationship. But have you had any that, you know, are not happy with your, you know, with your recommendations, et cetera? To what extent does the CGE collaborate with the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services? I know you have some type of relationship, but I mean, do you have an effective relationship, you know, where you have solutions, you know, is it solution running? You know, is it a proactive relationship? My fourth question, since these studies were done, you know, in 2017, 2018, and 2018-2019, and in your presentation you mentioned the dates and obviously that maybe, you know, further studies need to be done. Now, can you then tell us, you know, when do you expect to have an updated study, you know, or have you considered a follow-up or to review, you know, or to ascertain the implementation of recommendations that you've given previously to these particular shelters? Now, I just want this question. I'm asking this question out of clarity. I mean, we know that health plays a part, but we also know that social development and obviously, you know, when you're looking at the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee should be in. I just would like to know when you've mentioned that you have met in meetings with the social development portfolio. I'm looking at it that, you know, there were some recommendations that were discussed. Can you maybe give us a brief on how often do you meet them? What were recommendations put in place? And do you see these recommendations being implemented on the ground? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few questions. What is the provincial breakdown of state-run homeless shelters in South Africa? What is the total number of beds available in each province? And does all these state-run homeless shelters provide the following: substance abuse rehabilitation, to be reintegrated into society, obtaining identity documents and social grants, personal development plans, and short-term job opportunities via the EPWP processes. How much funding is allocated by each provincial government for homeless shelters? Thirdly, what is the provincial breakdown of LGBTQI-friendly homeless shelters in South Africa? How many partnerships are in place in terms of NGOs and governments across all provinces, and what are the budgets across all provinces in place to assist these NGOs? Has the 2022 budget of the DCS made any concession to the recommendations? And if nothing is done in respect to the study findings, what is next for the CGE? I also would like to know, you know, in terms of the Commissioner's presentation, there was at length a discussion in terms of the criteria, and I really think there's an unbelievable urgency in order to ensure that a proper criteria is put in place in terms of minimum standards and in terms of reference, so that we never ever experience what we experience regarding the Esther Dimini, life Esther Dimini issue. You know, I think if there were any, if there were standard criteria put in place with NGOs, then they must be adhered to, and then it mitigates the kind of outcome we had with life Esther Dimini. Then my colleague, a member Ismail, spoke about supplementary funding, and just a comment for interest's sake, you know, that Ekurhuleni has absolutely no shelters, and it's a major problem because you find that women and children, all of the elderly, the poorest of the poor that are homeless, is just nowhere to be able to assist people in shelters. And, you know, there are NGOs, but there are really no proper government shelters that can assist. I am aware that we often, I'm from Ekurhuleni, we often have to ask assistance from the city of Joburg in terms of this issue. Then I also would like to know what are the shortages in terms of, within the correctional centres, in terms of social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists and nursing staff across board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have three questions regarding the shelters for children. And maybe the Commission can help me with these answers. Around in June 2018, there was some problems with provinces that did not pay financial grants to the shelters for homeless children at that stage. I remember at that stage we have a problem with in the province of Gauteng, and I've taken that at that stage a matter up with the MEC of Social Development in Gauteng. It was around in June 2018. My question is if the Commission know of any provinces are still behind with the allocating of grants to these shelters, and how many of these shelters across the country is affected due to this, and how many provinces are actually behind currently with the payouts of these grants to the children's homes, and what is the amount these outstanding amounts amounting to. Just if a commission can help me with these answers, it would be really appreciated. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question to them is, given that the Portfolio Committee on Health does not have direct oversight on shelters, what is your specific role that we expect the committee to play in this regard? And please state the undertakings by the Department of Health in this study specifically. Has it delivered on assigned responsibilities? If not, what has been the reasons? And the last question is based on the research, the last section that was presented, that dealt with the research approach and creating a scenario to say there are more than 200 correctional centers, and there are also more than 160,000 inmates in South Africa. My question is, why specifically out of a high number of correctional services did you decide to choose the six? And what is it that guided you in choosing specifically only to conduct the research on only the sixth one? And to say how valid is your findings that you are discussing with us that guided your recommendations? How valid is your findings derived from only six correctional centers? Should the same research be repeated and conducted in other correctional centers? Will the findings be the same? So how reliable is the findings of your research?
and at the same time thinking about the number of the participants that you chose at those centers. I mean, the maximum number there was, we talk about 10. That is a very small number that you can use to generalize your own findings to support the reliability of your own research. And to say you could, in actual fact, under limitation, have mentioned about non-generalization of the findings should the same research be conducted at various other centers. So I've got a problem there, and I would like to get the reasons that would satisfy the questions that I asked. And just on a practical question, I wonder whether you checked the homeless shelter in Pretoria. It's a center that lies somewhere in between Pretoria and Schoeman Street. The situation there is extremely, extremely bad. I would ask you, what type of intervention would you provide if you are given an opportunity to extend your research to this particular shelter? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Singwa, is there? We will go to Honorable Wilson and come back to Honorable Singwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Commission for what I find is actually generally a disturbing presentation. We as a portfolio of health, the main purpose of our portfolio is to ensure that everybody, regardless of who they are, where they are, what their circumstances are, get access to quality health care, which is the constitutional right of all South Africans, regardless of their backgrounds, regardless of their circumstances, regardless of their gender. And I find this presentation pretty disturbing. And I'm not going to ask questions as such, but I want to make a couple of statements and make a request to the chairperson in so doing. We visited a couple of years ago, well, in the last term, the portfolio of health, actually, while we were doing oversight in KwaZulu-Natal, did oversight at a facility where the inmates there were held for mental observation prior going to trial. And it was very scary. The health in that facility for both the inmates who were men, as well as the staff who were there, was seriously, seriously jeopardized. And I think we must look at both sides of the coin. Yes, we are very, very concerned about how the inmates are treated and that they get access to quality health. But we must also take into account the employees at those facilities, whether they be warders, whether they be psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, it doesn't matter. Everybody is equal when it comes to the Constitution. And I find it very disturbing when we are getting reports that number one, facilities have way too many people, way too many people. That is a health risk starting from day one for the inmates. But the fact that there's that kind of undercrowding and severe understaffing in those facilities puts huge strain on the employees as well as the inmates. And you know, mental health is critical, whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, and whether you're a staff member is irrelevant. And I think not enough is being done to address this issue. So in general, the whole report I find very disturbing. A lot of my questions have been covered by colleagues ahead of me. But I think, Chair, I would like to make a request. And I'm hoping that the Centre for Gender Equality will support me in this. I think we urgently need to have a joint meeting with the department, with the portfolio of health, the portfolio of social development, and the portfolio of justice. Because I think it is critical that we have all three of them sitting together, discussing the issues that have been raised in this report, and getting solutions or answers to the way forward. This cannot be allowed to continue. There are so many issues here, all of which go back to health. Even whether it's poor food quality, whether it's sanitation, whether it's access to psychological services, whether it's access to health, every single issue here comes back to the Department of Health. And we also have, or must insist, that justice and DSD come to the party. That is our responsibility as the portfolio of health. And we must look after the health of those people in those facilities. So my request is, Chair, that we have a joint meeting as soon as possible with Department of Social Development and the Department of Justice so that we can thrash this out, look at what's being done, what needs to be done, and make recommendations going forward. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the two reports from the Commission. Chairperson, the one I've got two questions that I want to raise from the first presentation report for gender, report for Chairperson, the issue of the presenter raised, it gave me worry, the issue of children who are 10 years, which are not accepted by shelters. If I can just get the reasons for not being accepted, especially when they need also help. The other one, Chairperson, she spoke about a shortage of shelters in the rural area. She even mentioned the Limpopo. What is the plan to address that so that at least we know that also other rural areas are covered, because shelters is where our people, when they need help, go to in terms of many things that are happening, particularly when it comes to the issue of being victimized by partners, the issue of gender-based violence in our country. The other issue is the issue that she also mentioned under their investigation that they didn't get a satisfied or satisfactory response in terms of the wages of shelters. I just want to know, Chairperson, regarding that. Did they also reported that to the relevant portfolio and also engage with the provinces in terms of that, particularly the offices of the MECs? But also on the issue of the budget that is being allocated to different shelters, and also what is the response, and the other issue, the issue of a shortage of staff. So Chairperson, if I can just get a clarity, whether did they get a response from the relevant department, and also they've presented their report both in the Portfolio Committee of Social Development and also in the Portfolio of Justice and Correctional Services. The last question, Chairperson, I want to ask, if the presenter, please share with the Portfolio Committee on the general uptake of GCEs, the commendations by the affected parties based on the GCE's experience in terms of recommendations. Would it not be advisable to make the recommendations binding just like the public protector? And the other issue, Chairperson, the Correctional Services Act 111 of 1998 enjoins DCS to, among others, to take a full custody of all inmates under condition of a human dignity. My question, so what are your expectation from this Portfolio Committee of Health? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thanks, sir. You initially said Socrates and then you changed, you said Minyai. So that's why I'm sorry for that. Thank you very much, Chairperson. To welcome the presentation from the Commission for Gender Equality. I've got two questions, Chair, and I think the first one has been adequately covered by the presenter. I was going to ask about what happened when an inmate got pregnant, in fact, get into the correctional service facility pregnant and got a baby whilst the inmate is in the service and of the correctional service center, and the presenter adequately addressed me what happens to the baby and all those things. Then my second question, Chair, it's something that is next to my heart, the issue of inmates that have got psychiatric problems and become mentally ill and cannot cope while the inmate is in the facility of the correctional services. What happened to that inmate? Is the inmate, if he can't cope, is the inmate transferred to a facility of government managed by the Department of Social Services outside the correctional center? Or is the inmate kept there and been looked after? That is my only concern, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Firstly, I want to know that the Commission, whether they outsource a third party to do this research. If yes, which company did research on behalf, organization did research, these two research on behalf of the Commission? That's the first question. I'm raising this question because one of the advocate once accepted a service and received briefing from the Ministry of Health to represent them. Then on the other hand, he unethically switched and go and represent the Commission before, which in terms of legal environment, that would be unethical. I must apologize, Chair, that I can't have my my video on. I have a very poor network. That is the first point. So if please they can indicate who has been outsourced to do this research, there is a keen interest to understand who. Does the commission agree that the COVID-19 has brought the unprecedented consequences, which amongst others made the infrastructure of healthcare, both private and public, to be overwhelmed to a degree that some private sectors, because they were full, you know, overcrowded, they have to request the public sector to offload their capacity to get them to come to patients to be brought to public sectors? And does the commission understand that due to lack of more development of new infrastructures, the overcrowding is also happening in the public facilities of education. The overcrowding exists even in the hospitals. The overcrowding exists even with prisons. I'm saying, do they understand that? If they can clarify that trend. Isn't that the commission also important that this report must also be present before the provincial government, whether it's the premier of Allan Winde, so far as the an MEC, so far as the issue of correctional service in Western Cape? And also, we know that these hospitals, these correctional services, they are owned nationally, not necessarily by provincial government. I'm saying that there's a segment also of the MECs of health in all provinces. What and also the key issue of the aging infrastructure. I'm coming from Tembisa, stay in Tembisa. There's a aging infrastructure of water, all these things, because some of these hospitals and prisons would have been done during the apartheid period. And I agree with them that there's such aging infrastructures across, which requires a lot of resources. And we know that South Africa tax base is almost limited. Debt to GDP is pretty high. South Africa is owing a lot of money to private sectors, including the borrowing that we have made from the IMF and other, and the World Bank. Meaning, therefore, the resources is not limitless. What the Commission think other additional resources need to come from? I saw that the Commission gave example example that the, for, let me just go to the example that they gave, that the excess, in fact, the findings, that the informal settlements should be uniformed, you know, and in the service provision there and so on. And they also made reference to NPO, which we know some NPO that are getting huge dollars, lots of money from the foreign government. To some degree, this NGO and NPO, they undermine sovereignty of our country. So far as Ekurhuleni, where I'm coming from, I know the informal settlement has been unblocked, and a provision of electricity in the informal settlement has been provided, water, electricity, and access to emergency services, ambulances and police. That has been done in Ekurhuleni, where I'm coming from. So, but I know they made reference to Limpopo and as well as the Northwest. But we have even a new prison, which is also private sector a prison that has been made, built by private sector, managed by private sector, which can't even accept more new prisoners. It's full. And I don't agree with the view that majority of the people that are in the most of the people that are in the prison don't understand the Bill of Rights or their rights. No, that's not true. Remember, even most educated people, you know, the lawyers are, you know, they're also arrested in prison. Many people, qualified and unqualified. So I'm saying the narrative that seems to suggest that people in majority, they may not necessarily understand their Bill of Rights in prison. It's not correct. You know, maybe as you said that your samples, maybe perhaps the sampling that we have got would have given that outcome. But we know that prison, you know, both educated and uneducated, they're in prison. They're in prison, and I'm sure if they have to get the skill profile of all the people that are in prison, that will help in addition to the sampling that they've made. And I think I agree with the view that this report, they must be shared with also joint structures of the social services and also justice and correctional services, because they are key element of health. We have a keen interest on health matters, but it's important that this report is then shared and so on. I want also to understand why the commission could not conduct these studies when the prison in terms of food supply was being provided by Busasa, if they can give us the reason as to why it could not be done then. Because it would have been very interesting to understand some of the weaknesses in the hospital, or the whether it's good services or bad services. And I know they took those relevant to their own mandate, which have no problem. Lastly, Honorable Chair, I just want to refer to the slide that they put forward there. I'm opening that, please be patient with me. That was on the findings. Let's see. Or on the overcrowding. By the way, there was no stage to prison in the Republic. They were not overcrowded. During apartheid period, there were detention. We were some of the victims ourselves of the detention without trial. The prison were full in mass than what it is now. So the issue of the overcrowding, because people will just be arrested willy-nilly by the regime. All I'm saying is that the issue of overcrowding is not new. But the problem always will be directed to what? To the treasury. To the treasury. Because each and every department has indicated this plan, but the treasury doesn't release the money to fund their plans, to build new correctional service. It's not being provided. Treasury is not providing money, more money for new prison. Treasury is like the authority of the purse in this country. They will not. How do we handle that circumstance? But nonetheless, some of the issues that they've raised, they may be, Chairperson, they may be required to come back for more debate, because they took from 9:30 to 10:47 to present, and we have small time to debate. I would want them to invite it back to further debate their presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the issues you have raised for the commissioners and the CEO of the TTE. We appreciate it. Just for a matter of clarity, this matter of report is referred to this committee. And when a report is referred, we are obliged to engage with it. And we therefore have then undertaken to do that as we had today. Just to take us to the point of what your Honorable Timber Fayo was asking earlier, and a wonderful suggestion by yourself, that we look at a joint meeting with the Portfolio Committees of Social Development and Justice. And from myself, there's so many questions which have been asked. I'm not going to ask any further questions. Ms. Robertson, you're very welcome to go straight on to answering the questions raised by the Honorable Minister. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair was not very audible. I'm not sure if Honorable Chair asked any question. I wrote in the chat.
Yes, I did not ask any specific question because so many questions were raised. You can please continue to answer the questions of the honorable members, and I will then give some closing remarks later as to my thoughts with regards to this. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I will start with the first comment, which was followed by a question around the defaulting on ARVs and the stigma and why people don't seek services or refuse to the services. And a very detrimental example was provided by Honorable Sukes. And the question the Honorable asked was, is there other research that has been done in this regard? And Honorable Members, Honorable Chair, I think for us as the CGE, we speak to the research that we have done, and what we also like to say in this regard is, and I think this response will apply to other comments that honorable members have made, that when we conduct research or investigating studies, these are in our APPs every year, the follow-ups. Hence, for the shelter presentation, I had indicated that there is a 1920 and a 2021 progress report. So a lot of the questions that honorable members have put forward, those presentations have shown progress. So there is, for instance, the question around the uptake in terms of the commission's recommendations, the 2019-20 and 2020-21 report shows what we deem a good response. It's not perfect, it's not all 100% implemented, but we see good progress in terms of the recommendations. For instance, and again, this comment maybe will cover the issue of how does health feature here, the portfolio committee. And as honorable members would know, we listed relevant departments in both the presentations that are affected by these services. So the health services, when we look at the correctional services services study, this is where our recommendations indicate how the department can assist. That's how we looked at that. And our point of departure in that sense is that we know that in terms of the design of our government system, collaboration is very key. So SAPS cannot do anything on its own if the justice system doesn't, and I'm just making this examples in terms of how different duty bearers' roles are linked, so to speak. So when we do this work, we involve those who are affected by the services. And the ones we involve are not necessarily the only, but because we need to have a scope, we try to find key departments that will be able to assist in these services if our recommendations are implemented. So that is basically what we do. We do follow up on each a report or recommendations, in each research and investigative studies that we have done. But I did indicate that for the correctional services study, and I said my chair and my commissioners might correct me, but I don't think we have done a follow-up on this one, on the correctional services one, as a research study. The issue of insufficient funds from government and what other alternatives, this generally, pretty much every service in the country will talk about a shortage of funds, and we do know that as a country, we have that situation of shortage of funds. But in terms of shelters and where they get funding from donors, and Honorable, I think it was Honorable Munyai in the end, have indicated that, that we acknowledge that's why they are able to donate stuff where things are required in different services, not only what we have presented, but eventually as a country, we also have in our policy environment, we also have duties around these entities. And that is what we were looking at. When you talk to issues of shelters, what you see, what has been of concern and why this was brought to the CGE was the unequal allocation of funding for the shelters. So as I've indicated, there is progress. So the unequal allocation was an issue. We have provided recommendations. Some were responded to. When we present the next two progress reports, we will be able to see, should the committee invite us to do that, we should be able to see that a lot of things that are presented today, some of them have been corrected. For instance, the Department of DPW was involved here, and we know that they have provided buildings that were not being used with different provinces. The issue of Limpopo and the Northwest, there is an update. So the recommendations of the CGE are implemented. And as the CGE, I don't think we necessarily want to see, of course it would be ideal to see 100% of our recommendations implemented, but we do take cognizance of the realities that we have as different entities with different responsibilities and challenges. So when we see implementation, for instance, 50% of our recommendations being implemented, we are encouraged that as a country, we do pay attention to recommendations of Chapter 9 institutions. And I think I just addressed the issue of entities not being happy with the recommendations. I think this was one of the comments, I think it was Honorable Hasina, in terms of our relationships with the correctional service, also the follow-up study, and how often we meet with these entities. So generally, when we release reports, we do present, and the follow-up reports where we've done follow-up with the shelters will show that. We do present to them, get a response, and then follow up should we need to follow up. So we don't do this and leave it there. And what informs what we follow up, it depends on what is in a particular investigation study and or a research study. So you draw priorities out of there. There are situations that need attention as in now, and we will prioritize as such. Of course, we are informed by other information that we have in our work to say how we prioritize what we follow up. And this, I do know for sure that, and I indicated in my presentation that the shelter report, the third, the 2021 report is not the last, because I know we already are intending to put it in our research agenda as a project. And we do work with various departments on various projects. For instance, we do hold hearings with your SAPs, your correctional services. Our investigation reports, if you go back in history, we will be able to see that all the entities that we have engaged, both private and public. But speaking of the private and public, I want to quickly also address the issue of the homeless shelter in Pretoria, that it wasn't part of this study, and perhaps to also get into the comment about why only the six. As I was presenting, I did indicate that in the CGE, we pretty much have one person for one function. So in the provinces, we have one researcher for a province, one legal officer, one public education officer, and so forth, with the heads of these departments at head office who supervise the work of the provinces. So when it comes to sampling, I did indicate that our capacity is limited. And now as an institution, we are having that discussion that it's about time that we really have a way of motivating for resources that will help us respond effectively to our mandate, because the mandate is a mammoth one, but the resources are really, you cannot have one per province when demand is so high. And I think, having said that, I will jump again. I'm trying to respond to the comments and questions in a way that relates to each other, because this takes me back to Honorable Munyai's comments, where he was asking, do we agree that COVID has added a burden, the issue of in services in general? And yes, we do. As the CGE, we conducted studies on the state of gender-based violence in the country during COVID, comparing with the previous year. So there's no denying that. As a country, we know there has always been overcrowding in prisons. And believe you me, I'm one of those who've been in those prisons back in the day. So what we are doing now, really, we are not, I think our approach as the commission is not to point a finger and say who is not doing what, but is to surface areas where we still need to work towards to improve. And as a chapter 9, That's what we are established to do. And this relates again to the issue of what are we going to do with this situation. And I think issues of jurisdiction creeps in, because our mandate limits us to monitoring, overseeing, reporting to Parliament and say this is what we are finding. And when we do this, when you look at the correctional services one where we did six centers, what we are presenting is not saying this is the picture in the whole country. We're reporting on these, and they give us a sense of what is happening in correctional services. I was trying to draw common themes as I was going across the presentations. And for this particular study, you can say the information, once it is replicable across the six correctional services, you cannot say it's something to pay attention to. And as the CGE was saying, this is what we found. And then as different duty bearers, we will be able to then look at whether this is countrywide or it's just these six correctional services, because each entity has its limitations when it comes to resources that we cannot deny, and we all do the best that we can with what we have. And that's what I was trying to emphasize when I talked about the doctor who was praised by inmates. The issue of minimum standards. There is a lot of improvement in our follow-up reports. The issue of funding, one of the follow-up, the two follow-up reports indicate a situation where, because we followed up on the previous findings, you get facilities that says, oh, the equitable distribution model is used for funding, but you don't get a document that shows how. And hence our emphasis on needs-based allocation of funds so that equity can happen. And I usually say if we fund using just a blanket approach, what comes out of that is that those who have always been left behind, the status quo will remain, because we are not deliberately targeting when we fund. And this is not denying that we have limited funding, but we are saying with those limited funding, we can try and redress the past. So that is basically what we are doing. And I hasten all the time to present to honorable members, honorable chair, that our approach is not to blame. That's why when we see progress in the implementation of our recommendation, we feel encouraged. The shortages, I think I've spoken to that. The issue of shortage is not the pay grant. I know that has improved in the new reports. I know, what did they call it, the mothers, I forgot the term, but it's some kind of grant for mothers that was increased from when we first did the study to when we followed up and the last report. That the amounts were increased, but we'll get the details when we get to that. I think I've responded to the issue of the relevance of the committee in this presentation, the issue of grants pending. One of the comments, Honorable Chair and members, that I was picking up, I made those notes, and this happens a lot, obviously, as we present to committees, that some of the questions that are posed, you find that they were not questions that formed part of the research questions. So we put them down so that when we follow up, we probe on those questions that we didn't ask in the previous study. Honorable Chair, through you, if you allow me, I may stop here and perhaps give my principals an opportunity as well to respond.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome. I already see one of them having raised their hand. I think Tamara is part of your team, so yes. You can guide us to who you want to speak from your team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, my name is Tamara. My surname is Matebula. I'm the Chairperson of the Commission for Gender Equality. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I would like to just quickly respond on key issues that were raised by honorable members. The first issue, Chair, that I would like to respond to is the issue of studies, whether there have been studies that have been conducted by CGE or by any other entity during COVID-19 period. My answer here, Chairperson, and I think it's the question that was asked by Honorable Fugers. The question here, Chairperson, is no. We haven't seen any study. We haven't conducted any study. However, Chair, there are studies that have been conducted previously, and these studies have really looked at, why there was a loss to follow up on patients who are getting antiretroviral treatment. And there are some articles, I'm not going to mention the researchers or the research institution, and there are some articles, Honorable Chair, that have been released. I will mention just three very quickly. The first article was released.
Can I just interject for a short while? Just to remind you, we still have a sitting later, so I would think we would like to complete this by 12 o'clock. Thanks. You may continue.
Thank you, Chair. I will be quick. So the first article, Chair, was looking at patient-reported barriers and drivers of adherence to or non-adherence to ARVs in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa. But the second one, Chair, was looking at the cost of using a patient tracer to reduce loss to follow up, and again, this is another article. The third article, Chair, was a study that was looking at the impact of renotypic drug resistance testing on those clients, and it was looking at the therapy efficacy. But during COVID, I think for the past 2 years, we haven't seen any study. However, we will keep our ears flat on the ground with regards. The second question, and I think it was not a question, it was a concern raised by Dr. Susan from the Kwayo on the small, I think it was a concern raised on the fact that we have sampled very small centers, and I fully agree with that. To say that yes, the sample was very, very small, and I think we have been asked about this sample in other portfolio committees, and we do take that concern. We note it, and I think the reason was given here, Dr. Tembekwayo, that I think the budget allocation sometimes are the barriers in terms of us going wild and going wide in terms of looking at other centers in the country. And what we normally do, Honorable, is to really sample what we can afford with the minimum budget that we have. And then based on that sample, we sample, and we, if we have other allocations in other financial years, yes, we can actually expand the sample or the samples to look at other centers in the year. But we do note that it's really not really representing fully the whole picture of what is happening in the country. And we do take that concern on board, Chair. The third area that I want to talk about, Chair, I think we always cover some, yes, I have been personally to the Victoria Center, and however the study was not looking at that center at times. But I think Dr. has raised a very important thing that we can actually do in terms of just looking at the center in Victoria and look at what is happening in that center in terms of access of resources and the situation that the center is at. The fourth comment that I want to make here is around Honorable Anna Geller, around the binding recommendations and whether there is an expectation that we are having as the Commission for Gender Equality on this particular committee. Just to answer the second one, Chair, yes, I fully agree with Honorable Gela, and I also really agree with Honorable, I will just remember the name just now, Chair, but I think the request and the recommendation that we are putting to this portfolio committee, including Honorable Munyai, is that, Chair, yes, we would really love to have or propose a joint sitting of the committees. And I know that there were several committees that were mentioned, Chair, and we fully agree that, yes, if there could be a joint committee on health, social development, justice, correctional services, but also a women, committee on women, youth, and persons with disabilities, we would be happy to be invited to that joint sitting, Chair, and we would be happy to come and present these reports and have a conversation around our findings. And the findings, Honorable Gela, we take them as binding. However, we still do see that many of the partners and the stakeholders still do not take our recommendations and our findings as seriously as they are. I just want to, again, Chair, with your permission, quickly try and clarify a process that we follow within CGE in terms of why we do follow-ups on some of these study reports and why not follow-up on certain reports. The process that we have internally, Chair, is that with our research reports that we conduct them based on the research agenda or the gaps that we identify, on emerging issues or policy gaps, and what are the trends, and also based on complaints received. And then we produce these reports and findings and recommendations which are binding, and then these are done to inform practice, to inform policy, and to really look at a specific long-term identified issues that are gender-related. And then we don't do follow-ups on our research reports. Instead, Chair, we present these reports for the uptake by departments, by partners, by also CGE internally in terms of our other units like the PEI, who will go out and conduct workshops with officials, be it in prisons or officials in municipalities. So there is an uptake expected by those departments when we share the reports with them to take our recommendations and further HA. Whilst on the other hand, the investigative reports such as the shelter one, we do normally conduct investigations. We produce a preliminary report, which is the report that we have just produced and reported here. And then we give the department 2 years to implement the recommendations, both at a national and provincial level. And then after 2 years, Chair, we normally call them back, especially the head of departments and the HODs, to come and appear before us and account on the progress that has been made in terms of our recommendations and our findings. And then we produce the final report that the CEO talked about, that there is a 2021 report that was the final report that is tracking the recommendations, how far and what progress has been done in this regard. I just want to pause there, Chair, and really thank you and your committee in terms of inviting us here. We would be happy to be invited back to come and have interesting discussions with honorable members of this committee. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I was getting a bit concerned there with our time constraints, but we really appreciate you coming to do this presentation and also for your answering all of the questions which are raised by the wonderful members. When I read through your presentation, the question I was asking to myself is whether this was for the right committee in terms of the referral. I am still asking myself that question, whether this particular report should have been with another committee. But I do like the recommendation Unfortunately, when a report is forwarded to a particular committee, we cannot refer it back, and we also cannot refer it to another committee. Then we are not allowed to do that according to the rules. And therefore, the secretary of the committee will be noting that there was a recommendation made that we have a joint committee between the portfolio committees of social development, justice and correctional services, women, youth and persons with disabilities, and ourselves. So, honourable members, and thank you very much to our presenters. You're very welcome to make some concluding remarks very shortly. We are already overstaying our time, but it's not that I am just pushing you on. That we also need to work in the framework of what we are provided with. You can make some concluding remarks. Thank you. Did you hear me? Was I heard, Honorable Members? Honourable members,
Mr. Robertson. So the quality of your audio is very, very soft today.
So I am allowed the CGE to make some final comments, and then after that we will be then closing this meeting based on the recommendations which were made and noted by our secretary of the committee, that we will endeavor to have a joint committee meeting, a portfolio committee meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I picked up that you would like us to do the closing remarks, Chair.
Yes, just a final remarks from yourself, and then I will make the closing remarks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. Chair, the remarks from the Commission for Gender Equality is that in terms of the nature and background of our investigations, Chair, we are looking at key gendered issues from the shelter and from the prison perspective. That's the reports that we have presented today. And Chair, I just want to say that in general, what we are seeing as a trend is that there is a very slow uptake of the recommendations by some departments in terms of struggling to implement policies, in terms of looking at survivors of gender-based violence and prison conditions that are overwhelming at the current moment and before and during COVID-19 period, Chair. And we just want to emphasize the need for looking at the populations that are excluded, which is persons with disabilities, the LGBTIQA members, as well as poor gender mainstreaming within the public and private sector, as well as NGO sector today. So I think with these recommendations, we hope that some of these findings and recommendations that we have put across in this committee will be looked at there, and notwithstanding the fact that the chairperson is agreeable at the proposal for a joint sitting. And on behalf of the Commission, I just want to take this opportunity to thank Commissioner Ngoma Diseko, who is with us, and Commissioner Rakolote, and thank you, CEO, for the presentation. And I just want to thank the honorable members, the chairperson for inviting us, and the honorable members for the questions and the concerns, including the recommendations made. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, that brings us to the end of our meeting. We will be looking at minutes next week, in addition to what the committee secretary has been able to arrange for us. I want to thank all of you. I want to thank our CGE and their presenters, and I'd also like to thank our staff for this wonderful meeting, and we're looking forward to taking this report forward as is allowed for us to do.
much this meeting that passes here.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Member.
Recording stopped.
Bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.